Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking with a gentleman, Jerry Smith, who's really going to give us, I think, some perspective on how, until we walk in someone else's shoes, we really don't know what people go through. Jerry decided he was going to share his story because, well, I'll let him tell you what it's all about. Jerry Smith, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Jerry, the title of your book is Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? And I was really surprised to find that there was an introduction, or actually a foreword, that's the correct way of saying it, by Zig Ziglar. And this publication of yours really meant a great deal to him. Tell us how you got to know Zig Ziglar.
Well, actually, when I went into real estate about 40 years ago, he came out and did a motivational talk to the office, and I had just gone I just quit accounting one day and went into real estate the next, and was just scared to death I wouldn't make it, and so I was buying every kind of motivational tape there was. So anyway, I met him then, and he was writing his first book. And then I bought the book and lost touch with him then until about 1998. I found, as I'll go into later in my story, as I found the church and found God and turned my life around. And I went into the church the very first day, and there was a large crowd down in the auditorium. And so I walked down there to see what was going on with this crowd of people, and it was between services. And there was Zig Ziglar conducting a Bible study. And so we renewed acquaintances with him, and then he taught our Bible class for about 10 years until he had a couple of near-death experiences, and he's had to retire.
Fascinating. Well, you had this gentleman who is known by so many people for his powerful motivational talk. And you mentioned you met him 4 years ago, and he said that when he went through your story, he couldn't conceive, and I'm quoting exactly from the foreword, conceive of having to search for one's mother, question one's parentage, and to seek out one's siblings only to be rejected time and time again. Zig Ziglar then said he found it amazing how the human spirit can survive as it does, and that your life was anything but normal. Jerry, why did you want to write this book? It's not a big book. You've really compressed everything pretty tightly in your story. But why did you feel you wanted to have this in print? So many people, if they had tough experiences, just hold them inside themselves. Why did you want to do this?
Well, I've had, surprising to me, I've had, I don't know how many people that just came out and said, Jerry, weren't you embarrassed? How could you just tell all of this? And actually, it's kind of a twofold answer to that. When I spent 3 years searching for my mother at age 21, and I found her just before I was 25 years old, and what I went through, from that point on up into about my middle or early to middle 50s, I had this driving obsession to tell everybody that became friends. You know, you always say to each other, what did you do, or where did you grow up, or whatever. And I had this driving need, a compulsion, to tell that story. It was kind of like relief for me or something. But the irony of it was I never had any desire to write it down, though. And then I had more and more and more people would say, you know, you need to write this down. You need to write a book before you forget this as you get older. But that was not, just not part of the desire I had. The second part of the answer is the fact that when I was cured in June of 2008, and the doctor said in Germany, you are the first known person in the world ever cured of pulmonary fibrosis. Well, after that, I started getting telephone calls and a lot of calls. In fact, I've gotten about 200 calls in 3 years. But about a few months after the first call, I started having more and more men saying, hey, have you written a book to get this information out in terms of the medicine, how to get medicine, how there might be hope for some of us? And I said, no. But at that point, for the next couple of months, I began to realize that was God's purpose for my life, was to get this story out. But I didn't want to. I fought it for 2 or 3 months, and that's quite a long story, and you probably don't have time to hear it. But I resisted and resisted for several months until this became one of those driving obsessions. Well, it's a little bit like when, you know, you hear an old song that was a favorite of yours, and so you enjoy it for 2 or 3 or 4 replays in your mind. But after a while, you're ready to turn it off. But you can't. You know what I'm talking about? And all of a sudden, it gets to be a driving deal, and now you're trying to shut that song off in your mind and get rid of it. You're tired of it. Well, that's what was going on in my head, and I know it was God pursuing me to do this. And so after about, at that point, 3 or 4 months, I finally started the long fight to try to write a book. And then I wanted to put the whole story of the beginning and the medical part, which I'm finding out now after talking to so many people, and I've done speeches and radio shows and TV show, that there are so many people that are contacting me saying, can your doctor do for me what he did for you? So that is the, that ended up being why. And one quick point about Zig. I think as I tried to become friends with Zig that 12 years ago in church, I just felt the need to. And so as I got to know him week after week and he was teaching our class, a little bit more information would come out about my life. And then he started about 2 to 3 years before I wrote the book. He started saying, Jerry, you need to write a book. When are you going to write a book? He said, everybody should write one book. It's therapeutic. You need to write this book. And so that went on. Well, during the course of that time, I was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis. And here's the interesting part. Their oldest daughter, Susan, died of pulmonary fibrosis about 15 years ago, and Zig went all over the world trying to save her life, and they couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into the pulmonary fibrosis because that is a very important part of your book. But one of the things that I was thinking of as I'm reading this book, there are so many individuals who have been adopted. And I think of one young woman I know who was given up for adoption when she was quite small. And it has been a major trauma for her all of her life. And so many people who are adopted will feel like there is a hole in their space. Now, there's a number that don't, because they're very happy with their adopted parents and their life. But there are those that, just like you, feel driven, and they have a very difficult time. Now, the story that you have in your book is that the man who was your father actually raped your mother. And you went through this search to try to find out who he was. And this is something that maybe some members of my audience would say, wow, I'd like to know what he did to find out what he needed to know about who is the father and, you know, what happened with his mother. How did you go about doing this, Jerry? How were you able to piece together the parts of the puzzle regarding your mother and father?
Well, as I realized it at an older age, I realized that for some reason I was born with the determination of being stubborn and won't give up attitude. I mean, from as early back, as far back as I can remember. And, of course, I started the search in 1961. There was no internet, of course. And back then, adoptions were extremely tight in terms of people would not give you information under any circumstance. It's not like it is today when it's getting so, I would say, loose. And so the first thing I did was just went to a public library and checked out a book on how to locate missing persons. And now, at 21 years of age, I had lots of information in my head, most of it wrong. Like you would have pieces of names from several different areas, and they'd get combined in your mind, and they would be wrong by themselves. So I drove from Shreveport, Louisiana, where I was living, to Monroe, where I was born, about an hour and a half drive. And I drove down there every Saturday morning and would stay and come back Sunday evening 48 weekends a year for three consecutive years until I finally found my grandfather. And I did everything from working with names I had, and I wrote everything. I wrote the school records. I wrote the state for birth records, death certificates, marriage licenses. And as I got more names, it would trickle down to getting a more accurate name, and then I would redo the process. Well, eventually, the first break came when I guess I saw it in the book that said, you know, write the U.S. Census Bureau for 1940. I was born in 39. And lo and behold, they had a Jerry Max Thompson in the home of the Good Samaritan in the 1940 census. And so, therefore, that gave me more information. And then I would go to libraries, and when I had a name and an approximate year, I would go to a library in that particular town and look at the telephone directory for 1940, 41, 42, look up that name, write down the addresses, and go out and knock on doors. And all the surrounding doors, maybe 20, 30 doors. Do you know of a so-and-so? Do you remember? And I did all of those kind of things. So I did a tremendous amount of searching for three solid years.
Now, your mother's name was Alma, correct?
Alma Louise Thompson, yes.
Now, your dear mother was both deaf and, as they used the term at that time, dumb. She could not speak. She was impaired, and she really had a tough time. And when you think about that time frame, when you were born, it really was very, very difficult. And a young woman like herself, being considered deaf and dumb, then would have had a terrible time trying to raise a baby on her own.
Extremely so. And she was born in 1918 in Louisiana. As I find out, they didn't do much more than provide like a B&B. They really didn't do education. When she left the school at 18, she could not talk. When I found her at age 25, and I stayed in touch with her until she died, she was never ever able to talk. Every bit of communication had to be handwritten. And she had no other education, so she couldn't do anything. I mean, I look at it now, and I blamed her so much out of ignorance as my overall what I went through. And late in life, and unfortunately after she passed away, when I finally realized the extent of what she'd been in, I said, you know, I don't think I could have lived the life that she lived. And I was so sorry that I condemned her, you know, without ever letting her know that I was really wrong, because everybody abandoned her. I mean, mm-hmm. The point being that she had two brothers by her mother, her natural mother, and when her mother died, her husband, Alma's father, he almost immediately remarried and got rid of the three kids. Some of his family took the two boys, but nobody wanted to take Alma because she was handicapped. And so some other friends arranged to send her to the home of the deaf and dumb, as they called it, or the deaf mute, mm-hmm. back then. Right. And so as I tried over the years of writing to her in California, and I lived in Dallas, and I would ask for names, anything to continue a search, and she always took the position that you don't need this information. You don't need those names. You have a good life. Live the life you have. Don't have anything to do with those folks. I could see that she resented her family still to probably the day she died.
Well, and again, we have to look at a time frame. We have to look at the way it was that time, the Depression, and her being handicapped and not having the opportunity, especially in the South, in Louisiana. There was just an attitude, and people weren't really valued all that much. If someone had a handicap, you were sort of just, well, I don't want to say expendable. That's rather cold, isn't it, to have that kind of a statement.
But that's probably about right, yeah.
Yes, and it's just a real, real challenge. So you've gone through your journey, and in your book you go into quite a bit of detail how you were adopted and were with the Smiths, and there was, you know, just you ended up going through a lot of things, but there was a tremendous growing cycle. And here you are, you're young, you are trying to figure things out, you don't know why your mom isn't with you, you're going through so many different things, you end up dealing with a lot of challenges. And as you were growing up and getting out there and maturing, you ended up after, what was it, the Pensacola Naval Station?
Yes, Pensacola, Naval Air Station.
And you went there to enlist for flight school?
Well, actually, they came to the college and to recruit accounting graduates. They were recruiting them for the Naval program,
mm-hmm.
two-year program, uh-huh.
And so then you went and signed up, right?
Well, there was a long story to that. That was the deal, but then the families and all got involved, and that didn't go through. I was so weak that I let my in-laws, the first in-laws, they completely domineered and controlled us, and they used guilt in making me feel, because they were against their daughter marrying me, and so when it looked like that we were going to get married, they had me investigated. Typical of the Deep South back then, they found out that I had been an orphan, therefore I was trash, and they would tell her in front of me, he's trash, you can't marry him. So when we got married, they didn't even come to the wedding, and then they wouldn't have anything to do with our kids because they had my blood in them. But eventually, as grandparents, they did learn to love their kids. But then they did everything they could to alienate my kids from me. And so I wasn't able, I really didn't do any of the things almost that of the decisions that I tried to make to change my life for a number of years till I finally broke the cycle and just moved to Dallas. But for 5 or 6, 7 years, I gave up a lot of good opportunities because they were so domineering and controlling.
Isn't it amazing what we have to go through to find out who we are?
And you know, and the thing that I didn't put in the story that much, and let me insert right now. You're looking at the original book. I rewrote my book it came out about 3 weeks ago. It's a second edition, same cover, same everything, but it's much better written. It's about 30 or 40 pages longer. It's got pictures now of original pictures of family. All of this came about because last Thanksgiving, sitting at the breakfast table with my wife, I make this passing remark that I do from time to time, and that is, I sure wished I had some blood relatives other than my children. And it was passing remark. It was gone. That was 8 o'clock that morning. 1 o'clock that very same day, my wife and I went to a real estate function at lunch. Then she was dropping me off at my car, and I got a telephone call. Is this Jerry Smith that wrote the book, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? And I said, yes. And she said, well, I'm your first cousin from Bastrop, Louisiana.
Amazing.
And I said, no. I said, no. How do I know?
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, last week, she's in our family, we've kept genealogy reports all the way back to the early 1600s. And each generation has kept it current, and they've passed it down. It's my time to keep it current to the next one. And so I needed more information on my great-grandfather, James Slack Pickett. So I Googled his name, and what came up was, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? By author Jerry Smith. In his book, he talks about his great-grandfather, James Slack Pickett, and said, I just got chilled and ordered the book real quick. You have about 50 or 60 relatives here in Bastrop in Monroe, Louisiana. I've told them about you already. They're just all so anxious for you to come down here at Thanksgiving, and this was about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. Can you come down? We're all just dying to see you. And when I got down there, and they started giving me pictures from everything, pictures in my book of my mother as about a three-year-old, her parents, her mother that I had never, ever, ever seen a picture of, and her father and two brothers before her mother passed away. But the point I'm making is that I rewrote the book because I wanted to rewrite it better. It's written much better professionally. It's not any skipping around. It's not confusing. It's longer. It's got stories that happened since the first book and got pictures and everything. And so that's the book that you would get if you ordered it now from the publisher. On the internet, if you ordered, you'd probably still get the first book until they sell them out. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
I think that's good, Jerry. And one of the things that you're bringing out that I think is so important is that there is a synchronicity in life that sometimes occurs. And you had made that remark that you wanted to know about relatives, and when people have walked a path of experience as you have, sometimes we think it's never going to happen. And there it was, someone that got in touch with you and said, "Hi, I am a relative," and then you found out there was a whole bunch more than you ever imagined. Let's talk about this situation that you had physically. Talk about what you were diagnosed with and how you found out about a way to be cured of your condition.
Okay, at about 50 years of age, I attempted suicide. Then I was in coma about 6 days or 5-6 days or so, and I came out then. All of a sudden, there was more people wanting to help me than ever before, and I was now determined that I was ready to do something about all the anger and hate and depression and so forth, and that's when I started going to churches. I found this one that we still go to. Zig was in it and went through all of this, found happiness, and for 12 years, I was the happiest person on the face of this earth. I didn't even know what to compare it to because I'd never had any happiness like that. So 12 years of that couldn't have been more perfect, and then I have to just go in and have an annual physical, and I don't really even want to. It's too much of a nuisance, you know, and I'm feeling okay, but I do, and they immediately say, "You've got spots on your lungs. You need to go to a pulmonary specialist." I do that, and once he runs his PFT, they call it pulmonary function test, which is a breathing test into a computer to determine lung capacity, he then all of a sudden starts ordering another test, and then suddenly they want me to go in the hospital and do a lung biopsy. Well, now that really scares me. And then when they get that, then all of a sudden his assistant calls and says, "Well, they're sending it to the Mayo Clinic's lab in Phoenix for their confirmation or analysis." And they confirm it, so we go in to see the doctor on a Friday afternoon. And we sit down, and the doctor looks at me and says, "Well, Jerry, I guess the only thing I can do is just give you the worst diagnosis I could give anybody." And he shuts up again. And so I thought, well, okay, and he says, "You have a lung disease called pulmonary fibrosis. It's a disease that we know very little about. We've known about the disease for 25 years, but we don't know what causes it. We don't know what to do for it. There is no treatment, cure, or anything worldwide. And so there's nothing we can do." I said, then you're saying, since it's not curable, how long do I have to live? And he said, "Well, based on my experience, the best estimate I could give you is between 6 months and 2 years. If I was a betting man, I would bet it would be closer to 6 months. I'm saying, "Wow, this bedside manner is just really terrific." You know, I said, "Okay, so what do I do now?" It's a Friday afternoon, and he says, "Well, come back in 6 months for another breathing test, and we will do this every 6 months the rest of your life." And I said, "Is it going to help me?" "No." "Well, what's the point?" "Well, so that I can better estimate how much time you have left to live. And I'll see you in 6 months." And I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do now?" I'm going home. He says, "Well, whatever you've been doing up till now, continue doing that while you've got time left." And so we go home on a Friday afternoon. We're devastated. I am suffering every kind of emotional situation there is. I even scream at God, "God, why did you allow this to happen to me after all you've allowed in my life? Don't you think I've had more than my fair share, more than I can bear it?" And all of these things I kept saying that eventually came up in the book. But at that moment, I started reliving my life from my mother's birth and blaming God all the way through this time. And after, 45 minutes or whatever, I'd lived my life all the way back up to that weekend until I'm sitting there. But now I'm not angry anymore. I'm sitting there and I'm relatively calm and I'm thinking, I said, "Wait a minute. I just remembered that I never gave up my entire life. I'm not going to give up now. I'm going to at least go down fighting." So I said, "Well, what can I do?" And I thought about it and I said, "Well, what is there any of us can do?" I said, "Well, I don't think everybody can go on the internet, so I'll just get on the internet and start Googling and just Google every combination of words that you can imagine. Pulmonary fibrosis, cures, treatments, research, you name it." And the first thing I started with was with the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation of Europe, and it just quite frankly said, "It's an unknown lung disease, there's no cure, no known treatment or anything, and there's an average lifespan of 7 years." And that was it. Mm-hmm. And so then I just Googled for doctors and treatments, nothing for about 2 weeks. And I would, of course, give up after a couple of days, and the next day then I would be ready to to try again. I did this for 2 weeks, and finally I said, that's it. I can't even think of any more words to Google. And then that thought popped in my head, and I said, how about Googling a doctor that has his own lab? I said, yeah, that's good. I did that. A couple of days later, I got this doctor in Germany, and as it would have it, he spoke broken English. I was able to get him on the phone, which I wanted to do. And so I said, Dr. Keefe, I said, do you know anything about pulmonary fibrosis? He says, no, only that it's incurable. Have you ever treated anybody for it? No. He's done cancer research for 25 years at that time. Mm-hmm. I said, well, all of this extensive research you've done in cancer, couldn't that have some kind of an overlay here for pulmonary fibrosis? I don't think so. Strike three, and I was out, and I knew it, and my heart just sunk. I said, well, I guess that's it.
Well, then there was a woman you got in touch with, though.
Well,
she got in touch with you. Somebody, somehow or another, you connected with a lady, and she said her mother knew a person.
Well, actually, my daughter, our youngest
daughter,
had gotten married, and she'd had liver disease for a couple of years. And after 2 years, she had tried Mexico and different places, and she finally, using all the doctors around here, she had gone down to the University of Texas Southwest Medical Research, which I understand is one of the finest research doctors in the South, at least. And after about a year, they said, there's nothing we can do. If you don't find a liver transplant, you won't live to age 50. And so, so she was visiting. She'd gotten married, and she was visiting with her mother-in-law. And mother-in-law said, well, I know a doctor that, a friend that had been cured of cancer in Germany. So when then our daughter went to him, and then 2 years later she was cured, and that's now been 7-8 years ago, and she's still cured. But she contacted him, and he said, no, I can't do anything for pulmonary fibrosis. And so I didn't think it was important bothering with him. But, you know, we do anything in desperation. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to give it a shot anyway. And that's when I started Googling. Oh, I know what it was. I'm doing all this Googling, and for a doctor with a lab, and his name pops up. And I thought, well, wow, what a coincidence. I'd already ruled him out, but let's go ahead and talk to him anyway. And so now he was pausing and being quiet there for what seemed like minutes, but it might have been 15 to 30 seconds. And he just suddenly said, well, Jerry, if you're willing to send me 20 cc's of your blood, I'd be willing to analyze it. If I can find a culprit, I'd be willing to research it and see if there's any way I can make a serum that might have some effect on it. But let me tell you right now, I'm not saying there's any way I can cure you. Maybe I could improve the quality of your life somewhat.
Well, as he did, you ended up being cured of pulmonary fibrosis.
3 years ago, last month.
That's right. And your story about this is in your book, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? And this is something, Jerry, I think that is so important, because not only did you try to go the extra mile, you just reached a point where you say, I just can't do any more. I just don't know what else I can do. And then something would pop up for you that would give you that assistance. And I think that's what's so empowering about your small book that you have, is the fact that you never really gave up. Now, I know we're just about out of time here, but, Jerry, for people to find out more from you about what you went through, to know about your book, et cetera, they can go to your website, jerrysmith.org.
If they would go to that, they'll be sure to get the new book. It's the only difference on the cover is it says second edition. It's the same price. It's longer, you know, better, longer pictures and everything, and the same price. And if they go anywhere else on the internet, they'll probably get the old book. And I'd rather they get the new one for the same price. And my website, has a page that says pulmonary fibrosis. It's equal to about 2 full typewritten pages of instructions. In fact, the top says, Dr. Keefe's instructions as prepared by Jerry Smith based solely on my experience and cure. But it does not just apply to cancer. It applies to any kind of disease, because this doctor, he treats the patient, not the disease. He analyzes your blood and urine and everything all the way to your cell makeup. So that's very important that they realize that. And it's got everything, his name and number and contact information, emails, addresses, how to get there, where he's at. Two full pages of information. They can just download it, print it, whatever. There's no cost or anything.
Well, Jerry, you've given us a great gift. And for those of you living, not living, but you are living, and for those of you that might be living an experience with an autoimmune disease and you say, gee whiz, I don't know what else I can do, Jerry's story can be very inspiring because this is not woo-woo. This is something the man has actually gone through, and it's all posted up on his website, jerrysmith.org. Jerry, it's been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you nothing but the best in what you are sharing with other people, and I know it will be just abundantly wonderful for you on so many different levels. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Donna. I just want people to don't go home and just get, when your doctor says that, don't go home and just give up and die. Get on the internet and help yourself.
I agree. Jerry, thank you again for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Does God give us more than we can bear? Well,
no way.
Read Jerry's story and you'll find it out. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And if you'd like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I've got some announcements of appearances that I'm going to be doing this month and also free tickets that I'm going to be giving away for a wonderful event, so I'll be sharing that with you in a minute. But summer is here, and I'm telling you, in the Pacific Northwest, we are just positively giddy because the sun has actually been out for a couple of days. We just hardly know what to do with ourselves without our liquid gold falling on our head all the time. But here, it is just spectacularly beautiful. But I have in front of me an image of a beachside area and this phenomenal sand sculpture that I just am in awe of how people are able to do these. They're just magnificent. You know, they have these competitions for sand sculpture. And Adriana Heal said, "A sky made of satin, a sky made of blue, a shoreline of castles with sand woven through, a plastic pail, a shovel, some fun. These are the treasures of a day in the sun." Just real cute little poem there. And I thought how true that is. And for those of you that don't live by a beach, don't worry about it. I don't live by one anymore. But I can remember being a California girl. That's where I was born and raised. And that was the thing, to go to the beach. And, of course, we always ended up treating our sunburns afterwards. But it was wonderful to be down at the beach and to smell the salt water and be at the ocean and that type of thing. One of my memories of being in the beach is in California, the seaweed would come up. And I can remember as a little girl going, "Yeah, what's that stuff?" Now in today's world, we all know the nutritional value of seaweed, but I can remember when I was a little girl looking at it and thinking it had absolutely no value at all. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. In fact, we have a caller right now, and we're going to show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. Again, 888-815-9756. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, this is Lisa, and I'm calling from Manhattan Beach, California.
Oh, I was just talking about the beach. Manhattan Beach, my goodness. California has really nice beaches.
I'm really grateful to live where I live.
Oh, it's just wonderful. One of my favorite CDs that I have, that I just love to listen to if I'm under a lot of stress and really feeling uptight, is to listen to the surf. I just find that that's one of the most relaxing things to listen to the water, just crashing against the shoreline and the sound of the seagulls. And it just, you know, it's just absolutely awesome. I just love it. Well, let's get down to business with you, Lisa. Oh, it is. It's wonderful. Okay, first thing that I am looking at is you've got your work cut out for you this year. I don't see any shortcuts. And you know this. It's not a surprise to you when I'm saying this, because you have really, for about a year and a half, sort of rolled up your shirt sleeves, determined that you were going to make some changes in your life, and you've been able to do it incrementally, but you feel sometimes that you're sort of doing it a teaspoon at a time, and you go, "Oh, geez, does it have to take this long?" And I know exactly how you feel. But the reality is you're closer to reaching your objective than you realize. So that little teaspoon effect that you feel like you've been going through, a little scoop at a time.
I know it's beyond, like, I believe there's divine timing. So I understand that mentally, but it's like just in your everyday life, you're like, okay, come on, let's move it along, guys.
That's right. Let's kick it in the tush and get it going. I know exactly how you feel. Well, the thing is that you are gaining some good associations with people. And what I'm observing is that you are going to find that there are some contacts that you're making that are going to be expanding for you. It's like a ripple effect. So I want to say, remember to always put your best foot forward. If volunteering or assisting other people, make sure you let people know what your objective is. Discern who you want to tell that to, because not everybody's going to be interested in assisting you. But there are going to be those people you just say, "I'd just like to let you know. I'd really appreciate it if you find anything about XYZ, let me know." And just leave it at that. And I think that you're going to find that out of the blue, somebody's going to say, "Oh, I'm so glad you told me that. Hey, call such and such and so and so." Don't be afraid to speak your word, because it's people connecting with people, connecting with people. And you're not begging, you're not yelling, you're not doing anything like that. You're just saying, "Hey, just keep me in mind. Won't you do that?" And maybe give them a business card or something where they have an identification with you, because it will make a difference. Now, you've got something with your sinuses that every once in a while really, really bothers you. And I think what you've got is, and this is going to sound strange, but it's like an irritation infection that's latent. And it has to have certain types of conditions before it starts surging up again. It's almost like the body is harboring it. Of course, the sinuses are, you know, deep inside the face, and so it's very difficult sometimes to get things to work properly the way they're supposed to. But I do feel that there's going to be someone that has some very good information for you that's going to enable you to get over this. And it's going to be a relatively simple solution. So I don't know whether it'll be like a saltwater rinse or what. I have no idea. All I know is that you're going to say, "Wow, this is so amazing. It's really worked for me." And your general health is going to be pretty good. So the only thing I would want to say to you is make sure you get your rest, because sometimes you think you can get by on a lot less rest than you get. And you just need to remember that your body needs the rest. And just being quiet sometimes is enough, but you need to be able to get those 7.5 to 8.5 hours of sleep. It makes all the difference in the world. What's your question for me, Lisa?
Everything you said is so dead on, so thank you. But I actually called because I've met a gentleman over the weekend, and we're just like talking right now. But I wanted you to, I wanted to know if you could maybe like see what is going to happen with this.
Well, I don't see it moving real fast, and the reason I don't see it moving real fast is that, and I think it's for the best. It isn't, because I think this gentleman has had a few of his own experiences. And I think you just need to give each other some breathing space. I don't think either one of you need to be anxious, because I think you're both nice people, and you need to find out a little bit more about each other. I don't know that he's Mr. Wonderful in the true sense, as you would like it to be, but you don't know who you will meet because of knowing him.
True.
So I would just be comfortable and just sort of make the affirmation, if this is not that special someone that is going to be the Mr. Wonderful in your life, then that's okay, because you've got someone that is interesting to talk with. Boy, does he have stories. Holy Moses. This guy, you could turn him on and let him run for 3 weeks.
I'm sorry.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt you, dear.
No, that's why we got along so well. Because
he's just a real gabber, but there's a difference between a gabber and someone that has a lot of stories. And someone maybe you'd want to spend your life with. So just enjoy him. I would not push this at all. I really wouldn't. I would just enjoy the process.
Okay.
Does that help you?
Yes. But I might not pursue it anymore. I might just leave it alone.
Well, I don't understand something. When you have a fellow that comes into your life, not every man you're going to meet is going to be a prospective husband. We are indoctrinated. We're supposed to look at guys that way. They're supposed to be on the hunt. That's it. You've got to have that eye open. You're just out there searching. And it really is a sad thing, because I think one of the components of a male-female relationship that is so healthy, because women can have male friends. What it says that this person has to become a bedmate or a spouse? No. So don't just cut this guy off. He's a nice person that you may not want to, you know, really get intense or serious with him. That's okay, too. Don't turn away from something just because it doesn't fit within a certain box of your expectation. There's a lot of good people. Yeah, there's a lot of good people you can meet, hon. And just enjoy the opportunity of meeting someone that has a nice personality and is an interesting individual. Don't try to make it into anything. Just enjoy it.
Okay. You're right.
I'm telling you, society ingrains in the female. Don't you just love it that the guys are taught, hey, go out there, so you owe the buddies, it's all right. But the girls, hey, you're supposed to be a nun in a convent until Mr. Wonderful comes up. I'm sorry.
I think I'm dated
well
enough to know, like, right off the bat whether or not I want to pursue something or not. And sometimes I just don't feel like it. My life is busy enough, so I'm just like, I just don't feel like it. I'm just old enough to know.
And that's good. That's good.
But
that's good.
I understand being open. So
yeah, just make it okay. My goodness, I think you're going to be meeting some wonderful people. So just allow. The opportunity is going to be there. The opportunity is going to be there. And the Mr. Wonderful is there for you. I'm getting the numbers 3 to 5. I don't know if it's the months of the year, like March, you know, to May, or whether it's 3 to 5 years, 3 to 5 months. I honestly don't know.
Let's say
3 to 5.
well,
bless
you,
your heart for calling in.
You.
Thanks so much, and you enjoy this magnificent day you have in front of you.
Thank you. You too.
You're welcome, hon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a minute. Hey, if you want to call in, you can, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. Quick like a bunny, I want to let you know who's coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Richard Verkley. He is in Ecuador, I believe, and we're going to be talking about his book, Rag to Rags. And then, and oh, by the way, he's a multimillionaire. And then we're going to be talking with Aaron Lapidus, who's the garage sale millionaire. Yes, we got another one. Two in a week. How lucky can we get? And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about monsters of the Pacific Northwest. Yes, up here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got some doozies. So Michael Newton is going to be educating us about that. We got a wonderful lineup of guests, and I hope you'll tell your friends and hope you have a chance to tune in, too. Now, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, I am going to be doing two appearances this month. One is going to be on the evening, it's a Tuesday evening, July the 26th, at the Progressive Spiritual Center. I am going to be doing a talk about psychic development, and it's just going to be a casual interaction. I'm going to have books there. I'm also going to be having a few CDs, and some handmade angels are going to be on sale there. And there's a small fee at the door, which is $10, and I hope you'll be able to come out. If you want more information about this, and then the other event is going to be on July 30th. That is going to be at the Best Western Plus River's Edge. There's a meeting room there. Now, this is an interesting event because it's going to be a full day on July 30th, which is a Saturday. In the morning from 10 until 4:30 in the afternoon, I'm going to be a vendor there along with others. I'll be doing many consultations for people, but also there are going to be a lot of things going on. But in the evening, they're going to have a program from 7 until 10, and I'm going to be one of the VIP speakers. I'll be up on the platform doing some demonstrations as well, and there's going to be a number of other people that are going to be participating in that program. In that event, there is a fee of $35 for that event. The morning event is free. The evening event, there is a small fee. Now, you can go into my newsletter, and you'll find all the details. Go to DelphiInternational.com. Tap on the newsletter button, you'll get the newsletter that just came out, and you'll have all of the details, information, addresses, phone numbers, and everything else you need about these two events. Lastly, in Buckley, Washington, there's the Renaissance, a Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I have, right now, 13 tickets, admission tickets, for families to give away. If you would like to get a free ticket to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair in August. It's the first three weekends in August. Send me an email. Send me an email. Send it to donna@delphiinternational.com. donna@delphiinternational.com. And they're going real, real fast. This is a fabulous event. So anyway, I want you to know about that. Those tickets are being given away. That is being held at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake, Washington. So those are the things coming up. Gracious. Busy, 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 busy. All kinds of things going on. Well, I wanted to share, while I was off line there, while we were running some things, I was talking with our engineer. And the guys were talking about how they put together a garden, and they've got all these wonderful vegetables. And I have a recipe here that if you're like me, you love lasagna, but you don't like what the calories do to your waistline. Well, I've got an oven-baked omelet lasagna. And this is something that is really light. It's using fresh vegetables. This is so, so easy. And this is a recipe that could serve 4 to 6 people. So let me give it to you quickly. Do you have to have paper and pen? I hope so, because this is really good. It gives you the flavors you want, and you can add your extra spices after you try it the first time and find out what really works for your taste buds. But you're going to need 2 large zucchini. You need 1 pound. That's a great way to get rid of zucchini when it's coming out of the yard. You need a large portobello mushroom, a large portobello mushroom. And if you can't find a portobello or it's not in your budget, use some other fresh mushrooms. But you need a big one. So a portobello mushroom can weigh sometimes as much as 1/4 pound to 1/2 pound, depending on the size you get. So just check that out. You need that amount of mushroom. You're going to need an onion sliced, I'd say thinly sliced, and you need a cup, of shredded part-skim mozzarella cheese. Shredded part-skim mozzarella cheese. About 4 ounces worth. You can use 4 cups of fat-free liquid egg substitute. 4 cups of fat-free liquid egg substitute. Now, again, this is a lower-calorie version. You need 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of chopped garlic, 1 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 2 cups roughly chopped fresh spinach leaves. 2 cups roughly chopped fresh spinach leaves. You need 1/2 cup of roughly chopped fresh basil, and then 2 plum tomatoes, and 1 few tablespoons of reduced-fat Parmesan-style grated topping. Now, if you don't care about the calories, then use the real stuff. Use the real Parmesan. If you want to use eggs, you're going to need 4 cups, the equivalent of 4 cups of eggs. Okay, preheat your oven to 425 degrees. Your zucchini, you're going to want to cut it lengthwise into 1/2-inch slices. Your mushroom stem off of your portobello, you want to chop, and then you want to cut the cap into 1/2-inch slices. And this is what you do. You're going to take a large skillet, you want to spray it with cooking spray, and heat it over medium-high heat. And in batches, few slices, to fill up the pan, but just add what you can. Don't put too many in. You want to add your zucchini, your mushroom slices, and onion. Cook 3 minutes per side. And then you want to make sure you spray the skillet in between, because the vegetables have a moisture to it, and so you need that little bit of extra oil. You're going to use a 13-by-9-inch baking pan. Spray that with cooking spray. Lay your veggies in the pan. Sprinkle it evenly with cheese. Your egg substitute, you whisk that in with baking powder, your garlic, your seasonings, and your salt, and you just whisk that until it really gets nice and fluffy. And then you add your spinach, your basil, and mushroom stems. Pour the mixture over the cheese in that 13-by-9-inch baking pan. Bake it for 20 minutes until it's firm and brown. And your tomatoes, just slice those, drain them on a paper towel, and place them on top of your omelet lasagna and sprinkle with Parmesan. I'd say put extra Parmesan on the table. I really like cheese, and I don't know about you, but it's a light dish. It's enabling you to use fresh vegetables, and the calories, not that much. You're going to find it's satisfying, and if it's a breakfast, have some maybe some freshly baked bread or muffins to go with it. But it's just a twist on an old concept, an idea that's been around for a long, long time, but without all those heavy calories. Donna Sebo here. I know we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget that you, just like my guest today, Jerry Smith, you can take care of just about anything. Just need to make it okay that other people can help you to get to where you want to go. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening, and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.